And you're probably wondering what the heck an Ecotron is. And it's really this sort of set of controlled environmental units where we can study an ecosystem, right? It's kind of like, imagine like souped up jars filled with soil. And that's kind of what we're looking at here, right? But that's really a very basic way of thinking about it. These are a much more complicated kind of system.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to The Vandal Theory, a podcast about science and research at the University of Idaho. My name is Lee Cooper, and I will be your host for today. I am a science writer and editor here at University of Idaho, and I am joined by my co-host, Danae.
Hi, everyone. My name is Danae Lenz, and I am the External Communications Coordinator at U of I.
Hey, Danae. How's it going today?
Pretty good. How are you?
Not too shabby. So today, we are talking about soils. So, for the moment, I would love you to imagine yourself digging a hole. How do you think the soil might change as you dig farther and farther down?
So, I can't say I know all that much about soil, but I do a bit of gardening, and I can tell you that the soil changes quite a bit just digging a few inches down. It gets wetter, there's a lot more worms down there, and so I can imagine that if I kept digging and digging and digging, that it would change a lot. Every few inches, every few feet, it would probably change astronomically.
I agree. I think most people probably, you know, if they have experience with soils, it's maybe doing a bit of gardening, things like that. But we are today actually going to get to talk to two experts in soils. Michael Strickland and Zachary Kaler are associate professors in the Department of Soil and Water Systems at University of Idaho, and they are leading a national contingency of scientists in building what amounts to huge terrariums at U of I. And all of this is going to be able to help them study a world that scientists still don't understand, the deep soils under our feet. So you ready to dig into this?
Oh yeah, I'm ready.
Excellent.
I should have seen that one coming.
Well, hello, Michael, Zachary. Thank you so much for coming on The Vandal Theory today.
Thanks for having us, Lee.
Yeah, thanks for inviting us up to this show.
No problem. Happy to have you. Can each of you, let's start with Mike, can we have you introduce yourselves real quick to our audience?
Yeah, I'm obviously Mike Strickland. I'm an associate professor in the Department of Soil and Water Systems. I'm also a principal investigator on the NSF award that's supporting the Deep Soil Ecotron and director of the Deep Soil Ecotron.
Zach, what about you?
I am also in soil water systems, associate professor, and I'm studying soil ecosystems. And I am the other director on the National Science Foundation Deep Soil Ecotron project.
And we are going to deep dive here today on what is a deep soil ecotron project. But first, let's start with what is probably a deceptively simple question or a deceptively complex question. We're going to talk about soil for 20 minutes here. What is soil?
As you said, it's not like an easy question, actually. But, you know, I think we usually think of soil as that kind of thin layer of dirt, if you will, that we always see on the surface. It's where plants grow. It's kind of what farmers focus on a lot of times. But I think as we get more and more information on it, we understand that it's really a complicated system made up of living, non-living things. You know, essentially everything on the planet depends on soil to some degree. It's a really important component of our ecosystems.
And you're going to go and study not just the soil that we see every day and that when we're passing our wheat fields, what we see, you know, sitting out there, you guys are going for deep soil.
Right.
What does that mean? What is deep soil?
Deep soil is, well, you know, we can't see very far beneath the soil surface. So we often use tools to kind of extract soil and then take a look at it. And to some extent, we've been limited to what we can see or quantify as deep soils based on our tools. So oftentimes that's 30 centimeters for biologists, and then maybe a little bit deeper if you're doing soil tests for your wheat crops. Then there are deep soils where you're going several tens of feet, even sometimes hundreds of feet deep, where it's just inaccessible and the imagination just kind of rolls.
just, I want to make sure I'm clear on this. We're still talking about the soil that, you know, basically it kind of looks like what we see on the top of the Earth, but it's just much farther down, but before we hit bedrock, right?
Yeah, that's correct. I think it's a question of whether it looks exactly like what we expect it to look like on the surface, because you get some interesting changes in soils, and that's all driven by kind of the history of those soils as well, what they were formed on, what they look like. I mean, there's some interesting ones. As a graduate student, I was studying soils in South Carolina, and there's some really cool patterns that arise in deeper soils where it's almost like tiger striping of whites and oranges in these deeper soil layers. And so they can be really interesting, both chemically and as such, because of that chemical complexity can be interesting from a biological perspective as well.
So what intrigues you about learning about deep soils as opposed to, you know, the top layer?
I mean, first and foremost, like, as Zach kind of mentioned earlier, like, it's where, you know, your imagination can take over, right? I mean, it's this wholly kind of unexplored area, particularly from, like I was saying, kind of these dynamic biological processes and organisms that live in those deeper soils, and what are they doing? A lot of deep soil studies have, you know, we dig pits and we look at them and we might study some of the chemistry, kind of these static processes. But as soon as we open that up, it changes. And me personally, I'm interested in soil microbes. We know that those organisms change dramatically. As soon as you go below that top 30 centimeters, you get almost a whole different community of organisms there. And honestly, like, understanding how those organisms interact with the environment around them, what they're doing in those deep soils is kind of largely unknown. I think that's probably one of the things that really, really interests me about deep soils.
Well, you made a point there that, like, you can study them, you can dig down and look at them, but simply by doing that, you're changing it? Because maybe one of the things that people don't quite understand is a lot of these areas, like, there's no oxygen, there's, like, very different than the top few centimeters that you dig in your backyard.
Yeah, I think that's important to consider. And we don't know about that. And just to get back to what Mike was saying about exciting research questions that we can ask about deep soil, just because we don't know. We don't have the tools. We don't have earthworm drones going down through the soil sensing it for us yet.
I would fund that, by the way.
This is really an opportunity for us to think about soils in many different dimensions. So not only from this basic science of, well, what happens when you go down deep and the oxygen concentrations change and different electron acceptors become available and the whole chemistry and way biology of life might work. But also, if you are a farmer, where is my carbon going? How deep are the roots going? And how is that going to maybe protect my crops during stressful times that we're going to see in the future? And then how can we use this knowledge to improve some of the modeling that is projecting what the net future is going to be like? Maybe this is a really important aspect that we're missing. And then kind of finally, and Mike and I, we talk about this a lot, kind of the broader impacts of this project. It's a new way. It's an opportunity to reintroduce the public about what soil is. We're bringing up soil from a very deep depth. The actual samples are going to be much taller than themselves. So it's a chance to show that, yeah, it's important. It's bigger than you. It's bigger than me. And it's going to be here in Idaho that we get to launch this thing.
Okay, so let's then talk about your actual big project, the Deep Soil Ecotron. Can you describe just what does this look like? What are you doing?
So Ecotron facilities have actually been around for I'd say quite a while, but primarily we see these sorts of ecotrons, right? And you're probably wondering what the heck an ecotron is. And it's really this sort of set of controlled environmental units where we can study an ecosystem, right? It's kind of like, imagine like souped up jars filled with soil. And that's kind of what we're looking at here, right? But that's really a very basic way of thinking about it. These are a much more complicated kind of system.
Well, and these jars are how big?
Right. Well, they're a square meter on the surface and 3 meters deep. And they can house an intact kind of herbaceous plant community in the kind of surface of these soils, right? So these things are huge, and they're going to weigh somewhere around 10 tons each, which is amazing, I think. What we're trying to do is we're going to have these various what we call eco units, which are these 10-ton things that are going to be housed within a building here at the University of Idaho. We're going to have 24 of these, and we're going to be able to manipulate all sorts of different characteristics with the environment, from atmospheric temperatures to greenhouse gas concentrations to groundwater upwelling of deep soils to deep soil temperature gradients, all of these sorts of things. And then they're going to be highly instrumented. And I think, you know, Zach is probably heading up a lot of the instrumentation and knows a lot about that, but can also add to other aspects of what an ecotron is.
Yeah, it's like, to give you an image here, you go into the hospital, let's say, and you think about all the technology that we have for health around the human body. And it's that kind of instrumentation around these units, just every single unit, anything that we can throw at it to understand the processes that are occurring there. So like you were saying earlier, we don't want to disturb the soil so much. And that's a real challenge. How do you understand these processes without disturbing it too much? And that's why we have all these state-of-the-art technology associated with it. And we hope, you know, people around, so some of the industries around in Washington and Idaho and in the region will come here and bring their ideas about, yeah, let's put that earthworm drone together.
You said there are other ecotrons out there. What makes this one different than those other ones?
Right. I mean, first and foremost, I think that, you know, it's the first one that's going to explicitly focus on soils, right? That is like what our target is. That's what we want to do. Many of the other ecotrons, I would say, primarily focus a lot on above ground plant communities and manipulating those, right? Additionally, it's really probably the first modern ecotron facility in the United States, which is exciting in and of itself, and really represents a different way for scientists in the U.S. to do research on soils. I mean, and it's going to be, like we mentioned, highly instrumented, highly controlled. Zach and I visited many other ecotron facilities, and they're all amazing, don't get me wrong, but I think that, you know, the level of instrumentation and control that we're able to have at this facility is surpassing many of those current facilities in the world.
Is this a U of I alone project, or I'm guessing you have some partners?
Yeah, we have, we put together a very cool group of soil ecologists, biogeochemists, modelers from all over the country. And that's not even counting, you know, some of the other unfunded partners, let's say.
People who just have good questions to ask.
Exactly. and who are just really supportive of the project. So, but I do want to say that, you know, we have our other partners in other states, like Rodrigo Vargas from Delaware, Susan Crow from Hawaii, Kaylee Gash up in University of Alaska, Zeli Tan over in the Pacific Northwest National Lab, Noah Fear in Boulder, Colorado, and Dave Williams over in Wyoming. Am I forgetting anyone?
I think that's everyone, right? Don't let us know if it's not.
Obviously, there's tons of different types of questions you can ask for this. But I'm guessing, and from reading a bit of your stuff, that some of the questions are going to revolve around climate change and how climate change affects deep soil, or vice versa, how deep soil affects climate. What are some of maybe the really basic questions, like those really, really basic questions that we still don't have any idea about? And maybe some of the kind of really far out, interesting, creative questions that you're coming up with around things like climate change?
This is always the best question, you know. What are we going to ask? We always come at it from the point of view that, first of all, this is a facility that's going to be available to the rest of the scientific community. I mean, we have to keep that in mind. But we are excited about a lot of cool questions out there. And I think some of the low-hanging fruit, as far as research questions go, are about climate change, about how the heating of soil along the whole profile it's going to change basically the CO2 coming out of the ground, how trees and plants are going to react like to that. Then you layer on top of that, well, if you have increase in temperature, it's also a decrease in water potentially. And how is that going to change the nitrogen and phosphorus and all these basic building blocks of an ecosystem? That's unknown territory, right? And so we get to change it, manipulate it, and as Mike was saying, to a very controlled degree. And that kind of gives us unprecedented data, like a really fine lens to look at what's occurring. And not only for soil heating, but all kinds of things. And I think even the microbial communities will change. And I think that really falls under what Mike is interested in.
Yeah, that's one of the main things I'm interested in. I also think, we've talked about, obviously, the aspect of soils warming and the loss of potentially carbon from those deep soils, something that we don't have a real, we don't really have our finger on that very well yet, just solely because it's hard to manipulate soils at depth. But I also think, there's great potential, or at least there is the potential that soils can help us to sequester carbon.
And we're just to be clear for everybody out there, what we're talking about is because we're going off of my background knowledge. Let's see if I can remember my chemistry. Just because having CO2 in the air and stuff, that's a huge part of how warm we're going to get with climate change. So whether we're tucking it away underground or releasing it from underground into the air, that could really pad the scale one way or the other.
Right, exactly. And there's been a huge increase in interest in how can we sequester more carbon? I think you see that in a lot of approaches that farmers are using, or just the idea of, there's the Billion Tree Initiative, some of these ideas that are out there, right? And it's all about taking carbon out of the atmosphere and putting it somewhere where it's not going to be respired back into the atmosphere, right? So that you have a net gain of carbon, say, in soils. And deep soils potentially have a great potential to do that, but it's really hard to understand how much of that carbon is getting in there. I think one of the folks who was talking about this project earlier on was saying, deep soils are this forgotten half of soil organic carbon. Like, we know a lot about that top foot of soil carbon, but below that, how much carbon can we get in there? And does it stay there, right? And that's also where some of the microbial aspects are really intriguing to me. We know that those organisms are potentially anaerobic, so they're going to be slower at processing carbon in those systems. But what happens when you start pumping more carbon into those systems? And what happens when you have deep-rooted plants? What are the kind of factors that contribute to that? And as Zach was saying, what happens if you dry those soils down, or if for whatever reason they're wetter, right? Like, all these sorts of things come into play. And there's multiple factors that are going to interact to influence how organisms are interacting with those systems and how much carbon is actually going to be stored there and how much is going to be released.
So what's maybe one of the more creative questions that you're interested in exploring?
Are you not saying those were creative? No, those, just kidding. I'm giving you a hard time.
You called them low-hanging fruit.
Tough crowd.
No, are there some oh my goodness, we could actually do this. This has never been, I don't even know. That's why it's creative.
Well, and I would say first, I'm giving you a hard time about that, and I'll be quiet after this and let Zach jump in with it. But I think that one of the things is that they are low-hanging fruit, but they're low-hanging fruit because of this facility, because of this deep soil ecotron, right? Like, we can't go out there and manipulate soil temperature to depth and layer on top of that, soil moisture gradients to depth, as well as atmospheric CO2 concentrations. We just can't do all of that in the field easily, or at all. I would argue that many instances we just can't even do it. And so they're low-hanging fruit because of this facility. But it doesn't mean, right, that they're not amazing, interesting, fun questions to ask. But there are other really fun questions to ask too, right? So
Right, right. No, I mean, well, it's the idea of like deep oceans are the great unknown, the last unexplored world. And in fact, I mean, what you're saying is deep soils. We don't know anything.
Yeah.
We don't know what lives down there. We don't know what happens when thing A happens. Like, no clue.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I totally agree.
So, Zach, any last thoughts on which questions you want to ask?
Oh, man. I mean, we ask crazy questions. One of them was, you know, we're going to build this $20 million facility, right? And one of the first things we said is, like, can we burn it? Let's burn this. And so we have the capacity to light the vegetation and soil on fire. And that's really important in this region, whether you're kind of trying to track wildfire and the pyrogenic carbon that goes down deep, or how those microbial communities recover after a blaze. And then it's also important for, let's say, weed suppression in this area. So, I mean, there are many useful things that come out of that. That's also really kind of risky. And then maybe we can turn these ecosystems on their head, right? Let's turn it upside down. So let's have our normal soil temperature profile and let's invert it. Why does it change? How does that the microbes adjust to that? I mean, they're used to certain circadian rhythms. Well, let's start poking around and see how these processes change based on the environmental impacts that we influence. So we can get at some really cool basic biological things by pushing them beyond what they're kind of used to and comfortable with.
I will look forward to all of those findings and talking to you and getting a camera on the days you decide to burn the lab down.
EHS is also excited.
All right. So we're getting on towards the end here. Any last big ideas or anything you want to leave us with?
You know, on one hand, it's really exciting to think about all the research that we can do with this sort of facility, all the levels of control, all these sorts of things that we have the ability to do. But, you know, ultimately, really, especially here in the U.S., I think this represents what is kind of a new way of doing science, right? We're bridging the divide or the gap between like laboratory-based science and field-based science. And we're able to do this in a location that ultimately I hope will be just not just a facility for doing it as science, but ultimately is kind of this larger facility that allows us to kind of shape the scientific endeavor itself, right? So we're bringing together folks from across the nation, potentially international scientists are coming here as well. You're talking to Zach and I about kind of some of the questions we might ask, but there are a lot of questions out there. And I think it's those dynamic interactions that occur when you actually get people together talking about one topic, which is really the kind of exciting edge of the research on deep soils.
Zach, did you want to add anything?
So I was just in a agricultural systems management course and describing this to them, these students that are normally coming in from the farms and the field, and trying to explain why this is important. And they got it. And I think this is really, that has that kind of power to impact the next generation of land managers and scientists and project managers, is you have this tangible facility that inspires the imagination and kind of gives another sense of purpose. And I think that's something that we need to bring out and work on, but we're really looking forward to making that happen.
All right. Well, thank you so much, both of you, for coming on today.
Thanks, Lee.
Yeah, thanks, Lee.
All right. So what did you think of that one?
Well, Lee, I honestly never thought that I would be in a position where I was listening to a 20-minute conversation about dirt. it's just something I've never thought of. Like, dirt is everywhere, obviously. It's underneath our feet all the time. But I haven't spent any time really thinking about what's in it or how it changes as you go deeper. And so I just think it's super interesting what these guys are doing. I love people who ask questions that I would never think of asking.
For me, it's interesting because I have actually taken a full school course on soils. And I remember walking into the class going, how do you fill an entire semester on dirt? and being shocked that yes, we did fill an entire semester on what is happening. And what is shocking is it's, you know, basically as or even more important than the forests and the, you know, the trees and everything that we look at and think about as like, oh, these are really important in terms of, you know, protecting the environment and we need to know all about these and everything. And yeah, soils, they're so important to so many of the things that we need, obviously, farming and protecting our wild places. And it's so fun to talk to people who are so excited about something that you basically didn't even think about. And I'm really excited for them to burn the lab down. I think that'll be a really entertaining day.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you everyone for listening to The Vandal Theory. You can visit our website, uidaho.edu/vandaltheory, if you want to learn more about the research at University of Idaho. You can also email us at vandaltheory@uidaho.edu. And please go and check us out. We're on all the podcasting platforms. Rate and review us, and for sure, definitely subscribe. My name is Lee Cooper.
My name is Danae Lunds.
And thanks everyone for listening.